Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to the show. I am so happy you're here. Guys, I'm trying out a new audio setup here. So normally I record in a studio, but a lot of people who I want to interview just can't take time out of their day to come record in a studio for an hour, add on driving time with that, which in LA is like 5 freaking hours. Like, it's just too much. So shout out to my girl, Christina Rice, who showed me how to get this whole setup going. And now I'm mobile and I'm going to people, but I just always want to check in and make sure everything is good on your end. Everything sounds good on my end, but you know, there's nothing worse than shitty audio. I said it. Okay. Do you hear me, Oprah? Oprah, if you're listening, like, I really think you could get to the next level if your super soul conversations were a little more clear, just saying. Anyway, I want to preface this episode by saying that talking about beauty procedures and surgery and the things I've personally done is a little bit tricky for me. Not because I want to hide it, because it's actually the opposite. I'm very open about it. But because I don't want to be encouraging anyone who feels badly about themselves or is much younger to just go out and get surgery or like want to get surgery and think that that's like the solution. So it can be kind of a delicate subject. That said, I think we emphasize in this episode that there are so many options out there and that if your desire to enhance yourself isn't coming from a place of trying to fix the way you feel inside, then by all means, go for it. So that's the key. And then Jen and I realized that after we wrapped recording, we left out the most important thing of all, which is happy people are the most attractive people. I'm going to say it again. Happy people are the most attractive people. I think we can all agree now. I'm sure we all know like beautiful people who are just not very nice, and it really kind of like takes it down a notch, right? I'm going to add on another layer to that and say that like I like myself the most and I like what I see in the mirror the most when I am like useful and doing a lot for other people. So I can look the exact same day to day and I can not like what I see one day and then I can be like a really good person another day and like myself. I mean, it's really like the colored glasses that we're like seeing the world through, right? So there's a lot of inner work that comes into play in how we see ourselves. Anyway, okay. So this episode is near and dear to me because I adore Jen. She's helped me a lot. She's super smart and insightful. This episode is jam-packed with information, and I really think you guys are going to love it. Okay, so a little bit about Jennifer Hollander. She is a board-certified nurse practitioner with 9 years of experience working in both clinical and cosmetic dermatology. She is the nurse practitioner over at Dr. Ben Talley's office in Beverly Hills, which is where I have had procedures done, which we'll talk about in this episode. She is there. She's at the Aura Spa Healing Center, which is part of his practice, and she is just amazing. So I hope you enjoy the episode. All right, so I'm here with Jen Hollander. Welcome.
Hello, thank you. So excited to be here with you.
So excited that you're here. So I want to just start by talking a little bit about what you do. Okay. So if you can tell everybody.
Yeah, so I am an aesthetic nurse practitioner. I am trained to be a family nurse practitioner, kind of like your internist. If you can't see your doctor, you see your nurse practitioner. I chose to work in clinical and cosmetic dermatology, and now I work in aesthetics and plastics. And I kind of segued from being a bedside nurse and then went and got my master's degree. And, you know, I specialized in derm because it was always something that I really struggled with growing up. And in helping people, this was always something that I wanted to do at some point in my life after being a bedside nurse. So, you know, it's been about a little over 10 years that I've been working in this industry, and working in plastics has kind of been the crescendo for me because it's just a whole different height of, you know, looking at the face and analyzing and things like that.
So how long have you been working in plastics?
Let's see. So it's been since 2017. So it's just been a couple years.
Okay.
3 years.
Cuts. Well, so I met you through Dr. Talley, mm-hmm. who has done all my work. been a lot. but you are so amazing at what you do.
Thank you.
I love that, you know, you're also a proponent for like a healthy lifestyle, and you've gone through your own issues yourself. Mm-hmm. So you can really relate to, I think, the patient on that level. And that's so important. So we have so much ground to cover today. So we're going to try to do this in like an organized fashion. And we got a lot of questions from listeners and followers and all of that. So we will do our best to get to all of those.
Okay, great.
So can you just talk a little bit about what issues you had? Because you have like glowing, beautiful skin. It's flawless.
I have to say, what I've encountered working in this industry is that the people who experience the most adversity with their skin look incredible today because they take care of their skin so diligently, and it's because it's this traumatic experience that you never want to have to go through again. And it typically happens around the worst time of your life, which is when you are a teenager between the ages of 15 and 18 or 19, which is when you know, fitting in and image is everything. And it was awful. I remember not really having any hope for my skin, and also having like zero self-esteem and like dating. And, you know, my girlfriends had like the most beautiful, flawless skin. They could go to bed at night with their makeup on and wake up the next day with like perfect skin. And here I was doing everything possible. And I was not somebody who wanted to go on Accutane. You know, there's all this misinformation about Accutane. It's a miracle drug. And I always want patients and families and parents to make informed decisions. Make sure that you're going to the right person and getting all the accurate information before you make any choices. It took me 4 years to finally go on Accutane. I was kind of like at my end. And everybody has this idea about Accutane causing like depression. I was actually depressed with my horrible skin, and that's what I usually see with my patients and my teens. They're more depressed coming in with their face, and once their skin starts to clear up, they feel amazing. There's this whole other person that comes out that hadn't, you know, existed before. Mm-hmm. So it changed my life. And you know, today when I see patients, and we're kind of in a place right now where people want to do things more holistically and kind of get away from, you know, antibiotics and Accutane and medication. I totally respect that. And thankfully, I'm educated enough to be able to help people non-medically, meaning using skincare treatments and acne protocols and really understanding the pathophysiology behind acne. Mm-hmm. And I've also been trained to treat ethnic skin types, which is also a population that's just like completely, you know, untapped and not really utilized with providers. So, mm-hmm. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. And there's a lot to unpack there. So I just, in my head, I have one of the questions that somebody asked me on Instagram, and they asked what causes acne. And I thought at the time, like, okay, that's such a loaded question because it can be different for everybody. It can be hormonal. It can be 1,000% related to your gut. It can be related to your lifestyle. But can, I mean, in all the years that you've been doing this, what is the most common reason that you've seen, if there is one?
So there's different types of acne that you can have. You just have like regular, you know, pustular acne that's maybe, you know, taking over like 25 to 50% of your face. And then you have like the cystic acne, which is the one that leaves acne scarring. And that's the ones that I'm usually a little bit more aggressive about. But yeah, it can, you know, depending on if you're male or female, you know, with women, it's a little bit more complicated because like you said, hormonal shifts can cause, you know, surges of acne, typically around the periods. Women get horrible flares. Also the amount of oil that your skin is producing. So people who are typically very oily tend to produce, more acne, as well as, dairy. I don't know if you knew, but dairy can actually cause... I've taken men off of dairy that literally wiped out 50% of their acne.
Really?
Yeah, men more than women.
Yeah, it can be powerful.
Pot can cause acne formation.
I did not know
that. I can't recall if it's the indica or the sativa strain, but one of the two causes oil production in the skin.
Interesting.
Yes. So okay. I always ask patients, you know, if
especially
that's
here in LA.
Exactly. California, you know, we're all like smoked out here. So, so those are some of the things, that can cause acne. And of course, P. acnes, which is the bacteria that forms acne. So people who are, you know, maybe not cleaning their brushes properly or not very hygienic, that's a contributor. I don't think that would be the cause. Clogs in the skin, like I said, again, with oil, people who aren't exfoliating properly, not using any Retin A. That's more the really conservative type of acne, but the cystic stuff is happening from the inside.
Right. Yeah, you know, my experience with it has pretty much been that 95% of the time it's what's going on inside me, even though you want the answer to be something that you're doing topically or like your makeup, you know, brushes or your skincare routine. And so everyone seems to go there first when really it's like, at least in my experience, it's been gut, it's been hormones, it's been toxins and all of that stuff. So
absolutely.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on like birth control and acne going back to the teenager thing.
You know, I really try to stay away from things like birth control. I'm not really a fan of birth control other than for birth control.
Right.
Unless you really have to take it for birth control purposes. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I feel like there's other treatment modalities that you can utilize without having to affect your cycle.
Right.
And I feel like anytime you're taking hormones, I don't know. I'm not a really big fan of it.
Do you know Dr. Jolene Brighton?
No.
Oh my God. She's amazing. She came on my podcast. She has a book called Beyond the Pill.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about basically like what we don't learn, because most women and like even myself, I didn't really understand how my period worked and how the birth control pill worked until I had her on my podcast.
Wow.
And she's like, you shouldn't have to go to medical school to understand how it works. And, you know, she has all these women, like I wasn't put on it for a birth control. I was put on it for my skin at 14 years old and it worked.
Right.
But then like, to what effect, to what end,
you know,
it's so detrimental to your health. And then you go off the birth control pill and then you have post birth control and it all comes back. So like, what is that saying? There's something else there.
Exactly. You're kind of covering up this other issue. So you're just like, I mean, a lot of Western medicine is like that. Not to say that Western medicine isn't amazing. It is. But I
she
just
says
kind of,
in the doctor's office.
No, listen, I subscribe to both.
Yeah.
And I think that like the whole integrative approach is really the future of medicine.
Yeah.
With regard to birth control, I just kind of feel like it, you know, it's curing one issue, but can be causing another issue down the line. And, you know, we can put patients on spironolactone and on birth control and things like that to mitigate some of the androgenic effects from hormones and which can cause acne as a result. But I guess it all depends on the severity. You know, there's not a cookie cutter approach to every single patient who walks in here.
Right.
And that's what the assessment's all about. And that's what the whole, you know, history taking is all about. And, you know, I have prescribed spironolactone and I have prescribed Accutane. In some cases, that's exactly what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Is it my go-to? No, but you know, you really have to see how the patient is presenting and what their needs are and kind of go from there.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I mean, I'm without the education that you have just through my own research, like I also try to stay away from just taking a pill for something. But you knew, like, I was getting really bad acne a few months ago, and I did have gut issues going on. But I was at that point, like the breaking point, where I was like, give me the fucking Band-Aid, like just put me on birth control. And luckily someone directed me to Dr. Brighton. That's how I first found her. But I did end up going on spironolactone, and it really helped.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So, I mean, I talked to her about it, and she's like, well, yeah, it's like a, it's just kind of another Band-Aid, but it's like a lesser evil,
thing. Right. I mean, it's, you know, spironolactone is actually a diuretic, and off-label, it's been shown to decrease the androgenic effects of the body, and so we do it in smaller doses for patients, and it works beautifully.
Yeah.
So I'm totally not against that at all. It's just, to your point, you know, the only reason why it took me 4 years to finally go on the Accutane is I was at my end too.
Yeah.
Give me anything, because what I'm experiencing right now is not better than the risk of what, you know, is in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm glad I did it. I wish I didn't hadn't waited as long as I did, because, you know, acne scarring is a lot harder to treat than the acne itself, you know, so.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So when is it time? I know that whenever you have somebody come in, you really look at their whole lifestyle and you put together a really customized plan, and that includes products and probably some more aggressive treatments. So when, for anybody who's listening who might have acne or acne scarring, when is it time to do something more aggressive, like a laser, peels?
Right. So, you know, first thing first, we do talk, if they still have active acne, we treat that first, because you could be somebody who has scarring and active acne. And the some people come in and I think they've had consults in other places, and they already have a plan in their mind of how it's going to go down. And they think that they could treat the scarring while they're actively breaking out. And actually, that's a huge mistake. You always want to treat the underlying issue first, treat the acne. Once the oil has been cleared, then you can start, you know, hitting it with, you know, deep chemical peels and resurfacing lasers like CO2 and things like that. So let's just say somebody's come in and they, you know, we've already cleared their acne. Then we start doing things depending on the severity of the scars. Like, for instance, I had a gentleman come in about a month ago, and he has really, he's such a handsome guy, but he has like the worst pitting acne scars on his temples, in his forehead, and it really bothers him, and on the back of his neck. And we're actually going to be doing a blue peel with him, and I'm going to be posting his before and afters, and he's super excited about it.
Is this one that turns your face blue?
You are literally like Blue Man Group blue.
For how long? Yeah,
like for 24 hours. Okay. And then like once you wash it off, then it becomes kind of this like brownish, grayish, bluish hue.
Lovely.
But it is intense. I mean, we are going very, very deep. It's a resurfacing peel. But it's very effective, and it's one of like the gold standards for treating severe acne scarring. Will it get rid of it 100%? I want to make sure everybody's listening when I say this. Acne scarring will not go away 100%. The most improvement you're going to see is 35 to 40% maximum. Anybody who tells you otherwise is lying to you. I see a lot of patients coming in here with unrealistic expectations about their scarring, and that's like the first mistake. So if I can do better than 40%, hallelujah, I'll be very happy about that. But I like to kind of aim low, and you know, most of the time people are pretty surprised with what can be done. So
I think that's so smart though, because especially now you see you're inundated, right, on social media about like this laser that I'm not going to name names, but we were just talking about that one. I've fallen for it. Like there's really clever marketing and it's everywhere. And so I think people probably have really unrealistic expectations.
It's not fair. It's not fair. And yeah, I really subscribe to being really direct, very honest, because I'm a consumer as well. And I would not appreciate if somebody sold me on like a $3,500 procedure and I got like nothing back.
Right. So I'm curious, with when you cleared your acne up, did you have acne scarring?
I sure did.
So how did you get rid of it?
Right. So I'm 38 now. I've been working on my acne scar since I was 19. And it has been years in the making. So, and even now, I put myself under certain lighting. I can still see my scars. They're still there. Mm-hmm. But do they bother me like they did before? No, they're a lot softer. Mm-hmm. And so what did I do? You know, at the time I was doing chemical peels. I was doing microneedling. It really wasn't until I moved to LA that I started doing more aggressive things besides chemical peels and Retin-A. Retin-A is a beautiful thing. Retin-A is the gold standard for anti-aging. And it really helps to chemically exfoliate the skin, which gives the appearance of softer scars, as well as decreasing pore size by way of, you know, minimizing the oil production in the skin.
So are we talking prescription Retin-A?
I would say so. My go-to is a 0.1% cream.
Okay.
Creams are always more tolerable than gels, and the 0.1% is the strongest one. Now, if you're somebody who has like rosacea or eczema or somebody who's very, very like sensitive, we probably do something like a retinol or maybe even skip that altogether and do like Alumira treatments, like an acid type treatment, and you know, like on a regular basis. But tretinoin is definitely my go-to to minimize the scarring. And then when I moved to LA, I started doing like playing with microneedling, and it wasn't until about, I don't know, 3.5 years ago that I started playing with CO2 and Fraxel and things like that. And then tightening treatments like Profound, you know, all of that over time helped to change my skin. And I say this because it's not a one and done thing. A patient posted today about her acne journey with me, and she was saying that like some days are better than others. Some days you kind of feel like you're back at square one. It's not a linear thing.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know,
and I was like, yes,
I know, because
people don't really talk about that. Nothing is linear. I feel like healing from anything is and nothing worth achieving or attaining, right? It's not linear. You have to go through, and then you appreciate it more.
What goes slow usually stays.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what other products should people be using besides Retin-A?
Okay. So just for the general public, forget about acne for a second. Acne, definitely everybody tretinoin, and of course, silver. I love silver. Silver is like an antimicrobial. It helps. It's kind of like a toner that I have patients use to prevent P. acne.
And do you like a spray?
Yes.
Okay.
So with regard to what everybody should be on, everybody should be using a vitamin C serum. You know, if it has like an E oil in it, you know, for acne patients, I'd probably just go with something that doesn't have an E oil in it. But everybody should be on a vitamin C and a sunscreen. Very simple stuff. There's a lot of hope in a bottle out there, and these few core products are the only things that will help to slow down your aging. Nothing will reverse your aging with the exception of surgery, and that's it. It's all false.
Yeah.
So vitamin C, SPF, kojic acid, things like that, tretinoin, and maybe some lightening creams for some pigment. And, you know, I think some of the peptides that are out there work. I really love Definage, which helps to stimulate your own stem cell production. Elastin is also a line I really like that helps to develop hyaluronic acid, elastin, fibrin, things like that in the skin. That's kind of it.
Do you like hydrocortisone?
I do.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I do, not on long-term use, just because it can actually cause dyschromia in the skin when used, it can cause like discoloration in the skin with long-term use, especially in the higher percentages. I usually stay at about a 4%.
Okay.
So what I'll have patients do is do like a pulse like of tretinoin and maybe a lightening cream, depending on what we're treating. If, you know, if we're treating melasma or, you know, any other type of sun damage or pigmentation in the skin, it's usually on a protocol or regimen for a period of time. And then thereafter, you know, I just keep them on Retin-A and sunscreen and kojic acid and things like that.
Simple.
I love simple.
It. I feel like people, sometimes myself included, I try to keep it simple, but you're right. Like it's so saturated now with so many promises in a bottle, and everyone's like posting their 15-step morning and night routines. And
well, we want to rationalize. Yeah. We want to rationalize the reason to buy all of these things. And if you break down the word rationalize, it's rational lies. So, as much as I do, you know, you come into the Aura Spa and there is a bunch of different products that I've had here. And anything that I bring in, I always, you know, the reps hate me. I always try it on myself first. It takes me a few weeks. I let the staff try it first. And if I see an improvement, I take a selfie. You know, if I see an improvement, then maybe I'll carry it. But these products have worked over the years that I've been working in this industry for a whole slew of different types of patients. And they seem to do really well, and patients are happy with them. But if you ask me what my core products are, it's what I've already mentioned. And that's what's been clinically proven over and over to actually show a difference in the skin.
And you guys carry like SkinCeuticals,
we do. I really love SkinCeuticals. We carry almost the entire line. We also carry, you know, the Elastin line. We carry Obagi. I love Obagi. Their new derm system is very, very good for any type of pigmentation. I prep a lot of patients prior to resurfacing lasers, any type like before surgery, patients get prepped. We also carry the Revision line and LTMDM, and we have a bunch of different stuff here. But they're all like, you know, I feel like patients have been very, very happy with them. They've all really worked well for me.
Yeah. So. Obagi is like pretty old school, right? I remember my mom doing it, and she has flawless skin. You go through a period of the uglies, right? Kind
of. But when you do the Nuderm, definitely do.
Yeah.
You know, we don't carry the entire Nuderm line here just because I don't use all of it. But I use parts of it, and it's I don't know, it's just like over and over, it's just given me really, really great outcomes.
Okay, so let's switch to anti-aging.
Yeah.
What are some things that we can do lifestyle-wise prevent aging, since it's the inevitable?
You know what? I've been posting more about this on my Instagram. You know, a lot of my content is injectables and skin and all that stuff. And I started talking more about what's happening for me in my life and how I integrate anti-aging. And lifestyle is 50% of it. What you eat, how you sleep, how you stress, all of those things make a huge impact in your skin. At least it does for me. Things manifest differently for different people. For you, it's through your gut. For me, it's through my skin. And I see a difference in myself when I don't get enough sleep, when I'm stressed out, if I've had too much alcohol during the week. It all shows up in my face. So what I tell patients is how you eat, what's your nutrition like? Do you smoke cigarettes? It's the fastest way to make yourself look very old. The sun is also a huge ager, and like alcohol, I'm not talking about a glass of wine here or there, but tying one on every night, martinis up the wazoo.
You're preaching to the choir. I got sober at 28 and I smoked a pack a day, baked myself in the sun, no sunscreen, drank, you know, for 10 years straight. So when I got sober at 28, I remember seeing a photo of myself like outside. It was very aggressive light, but I looked like I was, no offense to anyone who's 40, I looked like a haggard 40. And I was like, oh my God, who is this person? And I was like, boop, 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 Dr. Tally.
it's unbelievable how different.
It's crazy.
You know, patients have reported to me, actually. I just recently had a patient who I did a profound tightening treatment with. And when we did her consultation, you know, I asked her about, you know, do you smoke? And she said, yes. And I was just so taken aback because it's like 2020. And I'm like, who smokes anymore?
It's
know?
Kind of shocking, right?
It is. Well, in the States, or at least in California, you go to Europe and it's like 1990s still. I don't know. Yeah. But it's so crazy with all the information that we have. Forget about like cancer and everything, but like it ruins your whole, your teeth, your face, everything. And that's the first people look at is your teeth when they look at you and they smile, they see your teeth.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. But with regard to the lifestyle, so the smoking, the alcohol, what you eat, and then of course, sunscreen. Sunscreen, sunscreen. I have like 17-year-olds that come in here and ask me about anti-aging and they want to talk about Botox and all that stuff. And of course, I will never do it. Not at 17. And because they don't have a single line on their face. But what I do tell them is chill out on the alcohol and start wearing sunscreen. And then I start giving them some vitamin C, and I give them a few different things to help to kind of help their skin glow a little bit more and kind of get them involved with like anti-aging. And, you know, their parents, their moms, the aunts, everyone, they're all doing it already. And they want to start getting involved. And it's become such a focal point in social media that more and more teens are actually coming in and asking me about anti-aging is actually
That's
kind of
crazy.
Funny. Yeah, it is.
Oh
so,
my God.
So we give them the baby version, you know, like sunscreen, a really good vitamin C serum. I even tell them, okay, start getting a good eye cream for yourself.
Probably all want to look like Bella Hadid and like
completely.
P.S. That's not Botox.
No, it's not. Like some of it is actually filters. Which that's something that's a whole nother issue.
Right, Photoshop filters.
Oh my God, these filters are making my life so much harder. You have no idea. Because people are coming in having these requests that are so unrealistic. It is so non-reality. And like half of the consultation is spent like trying to explain to them this is a non-reality.
Well, for surgeons too, I'm sure. I mean, I've read articles about doctors who have patients come in and want to look like their Snapchat filter. Because it shortens your face a little and makes you a little plumper and your cheekbones are higher and your lips are fuller and your eyes are bigger and they're like that's what their reference is. Crazy.
Can I just say there is something, you know, it's not until you leave LA and you go visit a place like Europe, for instance.
Yeah.
And you look around and you see how beautiful the variation of different faces look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now that's not to say, and you're talking to somebody who's actually experienced procedures herself, so it's not like, you know, I'm over here and just saying like everybody go natural, you know, granola. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that variation and embracing your ethnicity and how you look is a beautiful thing. Now if you're starting to lose volume and you're getting marionettes and nasolabial folds and all that stuff, absolutely treat it. But to change the anatomy of your face to look more cartoon-like and uncharacteristic is very weird.
Well, and everyone is kind of going for the same exact aesthetic. And I actually saw a post of yours from a while back that was, I think, Christy Turlington when she was younger.
Yes.
And you were like, this is – she had asymmetries, but she's beautiful.
She's stunning.
And like if she were in today's standards, like, I mean, everyone is trying to do the lift and the this and the, and everyone's like trying to look like a Kardashian.
Well, she's gorgeous.
She's
you look
stunning.
At that photo like one eyeball, she looks a little bit like, she looks like she has a little bit like strabismus, like her eye is going in one direction, the other one is going, she's stunning.
Yeah.
Like you look at her and the thing is, we never want to look at the face and aim for symmetry. Symmetry is not your friend. Flow is your friend. Mm-hmm. So when you cut the face down in half, if you take like Tom Cruise, for instance, and you cut his face in half, he is so asymmetric.
Yeah, he's kind of curved, right?
He flows. So he's kind of curved,
yeah.
But he flows really well. Mm-hmm. And he's aesthetically pleasing to the eye. And I feel like that which is exotic is attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are like homogenous, everything is the same, it's boring, it's flat, it's not exciting.
Yeah.
So that's just my aesthetic. That's my opinion. It doesn't mean that it has to be, you know, the truth or everyone else's, but that's kind of the way I approach aesthetics. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And same with Dr. Talley. And that's what I really like about you guys is that you're not trying to make anybody look like someone different. It's just to like enhance and make you look like a better version of yourself or more balanced version of yourself. Even like I was talking to a girlfriend about this last night about how much pressure there is here and we're kind of in this bubble and especially with social media and everybody is trying to look the same and who can be prettier, you know, and it's like this constant comparison. But even like I've been spending a lot of time in New York, still a coastal city, but it's a very different aesthetic there. And and it's just interesting because I go there and I'm like, oh, wow, like I even feel a little bit extreme there because everybody's like the no makeup. But everybody, they don't look the same.
They
like it's
different.
Very refreshing.
Yes. Yeah. People look different. There's variation. You can like you can actually see like cultures and ethnicities
right.
and different like hairstyles. And yeah, it's more colorful.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So when it's time for injectables, let's clarify something for everybody because I think a lot of people know the difference, but a lot of people mix up Botox and filler and think they're kind of interchangeable. So can you just kind of break down and discern for everybody what the difference is?
Yes. It's actually really funny. I was in San Francisco visiting my parents and my dad made a comment about one of my mom's friends and said she has too much Botox in her face. And it was definitely like filler, basically.
Right.
So Botox is, or Botox Dysport, you know, Jeuveau, these are some of the most common ones that we see on the market right now. They are neuromodulators. So they're muscle relaxers. Think of them that way. So they get injected into the muscle of the face to help with, you know, dynamic lines. So on the forehead, between the eyes, around the eyes, things like that. Those are the most traditional areas that are treated. So for wrinkles, essentially. Filler is to, you know, we use hyaluronic acid gels here, and we use it to volumize areas of volume loss. As we age, you know, after the age of about 30, you lose about 1% of total volume in your face. That's fat, bone, and collagen, and muscle, actually. 1% every single year. Yes.
I knew that things started falling when I turned 30. I tell everybody that and they're like, oh, you're crazy. I'm like, no. Things started, they just started falling. They started drooping.
Yeah. I mean, when you're a baby, you know, just think of it like this. You've got these like tight little, you know, you've got this tight little full face. And as you age, kind of like a puzzle piece, they start to kind of separate, these pads start to separate like islands. And that's when you start to get, you know, the nasolabial folds and, you know, the temple hollowing and the volume loss around the eyes. And it can really alter the entire appearance of the face and can be very aging. And you start to get things like shadowing in the face. So to answer your question, when's it a good time to start doing injectables? I'll start with the Botox. So I tell patients, until you start to see observable dynamic lines in the face, dynamic meaning lines that you have at rest, even when you're not animating, that's when it's time to start doing some Botox. I kind of like a little bit of smile lines around the eyes for women. Well, men, it's like a whole other ball game. But with women, I like to have a little bit around the eyes because it looks natural. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it looks like you have a personality. People who completely freeze their face, A, it looks super fake. And the older you are, it looks even more fake because people who are younger can pull that off more than, right, you know, anybody over the age of 30, I would say. Right. So when they have lines at rest, so in the forehead, oh, definitely the ones in between, like you get the furrows, so you always look really angry. And like, that's definitely something I've had women come to me and say, I just don't want to look angry anymore, you know? So mm-hmm. we treat those lines. But usually I start to see women around like 29, 30. I'll have girls come in their mid 20s and they say to me, listen, you know, I heard about like doing Botox as a preventative measure. And that's 100% true. Now, if a girl came in that's very young, early 20s, late teens, something like that, and she wants to come in and start doing things preventatively, if the girl has dynamic lines at rest, I will treat her.
Okay.
Like strong lines. I'm not talking about superficial little wrinkles. Mm-hmm. If she has very, very fine, light, superficial wrinkles, I'll offer her some Retin-A first. Mm-hmm. I may even do a glycolic acid peel on her. I'll do things to help to soften the lines to not have to do something like Botox quite yet for her.
Okay.
I don't want her to have to feel so conscious about herself so early on mm-hmm. in her life. There's other things that you can do.
Yeah.
Filler. Oh, and then on the other end of it, you don't want to do it too late.
Yeah.
So you have women coming in or men coming in and they're like, oh my God, like I did the Botox and just they're still there, these lines. Well, they're there because you now have grooves in the face and no amount of Botox is going to get rid of them 100%. So now we have to resort to filler.
I'm laughing because my husband is twice my age and he's never done anything. And I took him to the dermatologist for like a skin issue, but he does Botox too.
Yeah.
And he was like, why don't we just do like a little here and here? And he's like, he will not do it because he thinks he's going to look pulled back and like one of these Beverly Hills over, you know, stretched women. And I'm like, you are so far beyond that.
right.
It's so far gone. It's like it's not
gonna, even if you tried, it wouldn't happen for you.
It's so funny.
Well, so like for men, I feel like men, I treat a lot of men and I love treating men. Mm. They're just so easy. They're so straightforward. They are lucky because you know what?
They get so much better with age.
They do. And you know what? It's more acceptable socially and publicly. And they respond so much better to treatment for some reason than women do. Like
really?
They look amazing.
Yeah.
Especially when I do like skin treatments with them. Mm. They just respond so much faster for some reason. Anyway, fillers. So volume loss. Fillers are kind of amazing because it's an immediate gratification and they can make you...
Okay.
they're an immediate gratification, and they can really shave years off of your face mm-hmm. with a very little amount. For an example, under eye filler, you know, if you're not a candidate quite yet for like a surgery, like a blepharoplasty, for instance, and you're a pretty good candidate for something like under eye filler, it can change your whole face. It can make you look more delicate. It can make you look more refreshed, rested, and it can last anywhere from 6 to 12 months, depending on, you know, how you metabolize it. And it's totally safe. It breaks down on its own time. If you don't like it, it's totally reversible. All the gels that we use here are reversible. I think doing small amounts over time is definitely the way to go. Mm-hmm. Over-volumizing the lips is probably the most common thing that I treat here are lips. Everybody wants big lips. Yeah. And I think that New York East Coast aesthetic is completely different than West
Coast. Totally.
Girls ask for different things on the West Coast mm-hmm. than they do on the East Coast.
Yep.
So here I get a lot of lips and I have to talk patients down sometimes and explain to them and show them. And most of the time people are like, oh, no, I really want to look. We're kind of moving away from that whole fish yeah. lip type of vibe.
I feel like that peaked, like we're at the peak right now and people yes. are kind of like,
they're starting to see, you know, mm-hmm. and you'll see on my social media, I post a lot of 90s supermodels mm-hmm. because that is my aesthetic.
Yeah.
I love 90s supermodels. They are so beautiful and not by today's standards.
Right.
You see some of the 90s supermodels like Italian or Nigerian. They're like no big deal. You know, today they're like a no big deal.
Right.
But back then they were everything because they were natural.
Yeah.
They were natural striking beauties. So what I try to emulate in my aesthetic is the same features. Soft, delicate, natural. And that's why I get along with Dr. Talley so well. I love his aesthetic. It's very, very much the same that I practice. And patients really do appreciate that. I think that mm-hmm. we're definitely going more in that direction. So,
okay. But let's talk about like overfilling.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes, and you would know better than I do, it's more appropriate, especially when there needs to be a lift or something. Mm-hmm. There are other methods to achieving that, right? Where filler can kind of exacerbate it and make it look worse. So, you know, I'm thinking of like a lip lift, for example, mm-hmm. and I talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. One of the best things I did
yes.
because I didn't even know that it existed mm-hmm. when I started getting filler and all of that. And so I was trying to achieve something with my lip that just would not happen. I had a very straight across thin line and I was just filling it and filling it and filling it. And I had so much in there. I had like the Simpsons thing, like where it was like, if you look at my pictures, go in the computer after and look at my before picture. It was so bad.
Right.
And now I barely do any filler. You do a little bit when I just want to have a little more like mm-hmm. volume.
A little more hydration. Yeah,
right.
For yeah, sure. Yeah. That's a really good question. So, you know, depending on the anatomy of your face. So since you had mentioned the lip lift, mm-hmm. Lip filler, you know, it's a really hot topic right now since there's so many different aesthetics around lips. Somebody who naturally has voluminous, everted lips. Let's take Angelina Jolie for 1 second. Angelina Jolie shows a lot of body in her lips. So she came in with maybe, I don't know, 25% lip than she actually has. And she wants to kind of accentuate her natural lip body. Mm-hmm. She would have the most phenomenal results because she already has a lot of body in her lip. Mm-hmm. If you take someone like me, for instance, who my Eastern European lips, my upper lip was always very thin and long, okay? I see my grandfather when I look in the mirror sometimes, Polish, Russian. My lips have been always very flat. My bottom lip has always been fuller than the top. And when I was younger, it's a little cute, you know? Mm-hmm. But now I'm 38. And as we age, as I said earlier, like islands, the fat pads in the face start to kind of migrate from one another. And the ratio between the nasal tip and the cupid's bow starts to get wider. And you get a longer lip. So I had been doing lip filler for some time. And because of the anatomy, not Angelina Jolie, but because of my anatomy, whenever you would fill my lips, I would project and I would get a ducky lip. I would duck out really, really quickly. That's not a good aesthetic, especially working in my industry. And, you know, when I came to Ben Talley, that's his signature is lip lifts. And when I saw it for the first time, I was like, holy smokes, this is me. This is made for me. This is my procedure. And it's something that it was something that always bothered me, like my entire adult life, I would say. And it took me about 10 months and about 3 weeks ago, I finally went for it. And
she looks so amazing.
It was
so good.
The best decision I've ever made.
I agree with that.
It was the best decision I ever made. And I still look like me.
Yeah.
It did not change the character of my face, but it took at least 5 years off of my face. It made my face look a lot cuter and my profile looks different. And I just don't feel like I look as old anymore because when I would look in the mirror and I would, you know, from here up, I felt really good. But from here down, I just felt like, wow, like the filler is going to actually make me look even older because it's going to weigh my lip down because of the anatomy of my lip. So, and the distance between my nose and my lip. And, you know, my biggest worry, even working in this industry, my biggest worry was, is it going to change my face? I don't want to change my face. And, you know, I trusted him completely and I got an outcome better than I thought that was going to happen. So, you know, when I talk about surgeries with patients, you know, I'm a little bit more laissez-faire about it because I work in this industry. So it's like you become your environment, you see more. That being said, I will never recommend a surgery to a patient that I don't think they will benefit from. And if they're coming from a, like even, you know, patients who, for instance, have, you know, laxity in the skin, for instance, and they're in their 30s, does that mean that they're not candidate for the facelift? No, they are. If they have tissue laxity in the face, they're still a candidate.
So you're telling me I have a chance?
Now you, I don't feel that way about you. I think you look perfect the way you are. I'm just kidding. Serious. I really do. And for somebody like you who'd be concerned about it, I would probably say something like profound, something like a radio frequency tightening thing, which you've done before. It takes time. The only problem with these radio frequency devices, even though they're amazing, they take some time to work, anywhere from 3 to 6 months before you start seeing some noticeable changes. Surgery, it's like you're that's it. You wake up one day, you wake up the next day, you're a different person. So it's an instant gratification, and some people really do need it, and they get much better bang for their buck that way.
Right.
So if somebody's coming in and they have laxity and they have like a lot of redundancy in the skin, they can go from beautiful to like next level. You know, with just the surgery alone, and people are afraid of surgery, rightfully so. Scars, you know, altering their looks. Renee Zellweger, sorry, I'm just gonna say it, like she's beautiful. She's beautiful now, she's beautiful before, but she looks unrecognizable.
What do you think she did, by the way?
She did her eyes,
like a blepharoplasty.
I think she did a blepharoplasty. That's what it appears to be, but her eyes was her signature. That's
it's
who
crazy
she was.
Though, how something so simple can make such a profound difference.
Impact, right?
I mean, same with like Jennifer Grey. That was the classic, right?
Okay,
like
I am Jennifer Grey. Can I just tell you right now, like that's been like something when I was a kid, when I was in like my teens, everybody used to tell me I look like Jennifer Grey.
Really?
It was the lip. No, my Jennifer Grey. No, exactly. She was never casted after that, Jennifer Grey.
Yeah.
Her nose was her claim to fame.
Right.
But the thing is, these artists are so highly scrutinized, and I have so much compassion for them.
Oh my God.
And when I say Renee Zellweger or Jennifer Grey, I love these actors. They're incredible. They're beautiful. And I completely understand how difficult it must be to be underneath the microscope constantly about how you're looking, how you're aging, what you're doing. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when it's your like livelihood.
Right.
Right. So, but going back to the whole surgery thing, you know, Dr. Talley, he does a very different, his technology is very different than what surgery in our minds, in the public minds, is known to be. Downtime, what you look like afterwards, how it affects you, all of those things have completely altered. Scarring, healing, all of those things have been revolutionized. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about doing surgeries, people should really have a different attitude about what that means. And, there's a lot of judgment around surgeries and things like that. And I think it's because of all the bad work that's out there. So it's kind of like when your husband doesn't want you to do X, Y, and Z. Well, he's just seen a lot of crappy work out there.
Yeah, Chuck, are you listening?
No, but not. I think I get it. Like, I can relate to that. I wouldn't want that either for my person, but you don't know the other side of it. Mm-hmm. You see Jennifer Aniston, you see, all actors that are out there. They look really good, but they all get work done.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just don't, you don't know because and it's good
younger,
work.
And the younger girls too, though. I mean, I think that's too important because I have some younger listeners and, I think people compare themselves to these people and think like, well, why don't I look like that? Like they're getting help.
I mean, I see pictures of myself when I was 12. I look so different than the 12-year-olds today.
Oh my God. Like, it's I look crazy. Ridiculous. It's crazy.
Like even, my outfits and my face and my hair.
Even like 20s. Different. I mean, it's just.
I know.
It's a whole different.
The expectation has gone way up.
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine being that age and watching what these people do and post in their day-to-day lives, and it's all filtered and photoshopped anyway. And so of course you're going to compare yourself. Even as a woman in her 30s, I can fall into that trap. So totally. I can't imagine being like still developing.
Well, it's getting harder and harder. And again, we live in like the mecca of like all of that stuff. And so, I feel like we kind of do have to compete with our younger selves mm-hmm. in a way, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I want to just quickly touch on like the superficiality of it and people who, it's very stigmatized. Mm-hmm. I think it's getting more understood and maybe more mainstream. But I think there's probably also more judgment.
There's a lot of judgment. With that.
So what do you say to people who say that like it's superficial and shallow?
Yeah, I think that judgment in and of itself should really, really be moderated in any topic. I think judgment is not really a characteristic that is a shining feature for any of us to have. Mm-hmm. And actually a girlfriend of mine recently was just telling me that one of her good girlfriends was shaming her about Botox. But you should see her girlfriend. I'm sorry. And you know what? She's a feminist. Mm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with feminism. But I also don't think that in order to be feel good about yourself and feel, whatever, that you have to let yourself go. Mm-hmm. That's your choice. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you want to do, all power to you.
Right.
Because on the other end of it, I could say, you look like crap. Do you know what I mean? It's like you can go one way or the other. You're doing too much Botox. Well, you look like crap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, if somebody wants to do things more natural and maybe just use topical treatments and what have you, facials and things like that, nothing wrong with that. Go for it. That's great. But judging somebody else for doing Botox, fillers, skincare treatments, surgeries. Mm-hmm. I think that if it looks bad, there's a cause for concern. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's legitimate. But when somebody looks great and then her friend asks her, you look really good. Like, what have you been up to? Oh, I've been seeing this new like NP Jen Hollander. She's been really hooking my face up. And then they throw judgment at you. Mm-hmm. That's a projection. That has nothing to do with what's happening for you. And I think that that has all to do with them. And, I don't really have much more to say about that other than, people who judge others for doing things that help them look and feel better about themselves. I'm not really for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, it's so important to remember kind of what you touched on at the end. Like, you look better, you feel better. I mean, they go hand in hand, and it's like not mutually exclusive. Like, you can be a feminist and you can also care about how you look.
Exactly.
You can be smart and intelligent and have, and also care about how you look.
Exactly.
And I can attest, because I've had multiple procedures, I can't speak for other people, but I didn't do it to fix anything. Mm-hmm. If you go into it expecting it to change the way you feel and make you happier, that might be a problem. It's kind of like the motive behind it, I think.
You make a really good point. Mm-hmm. And I've had, and this is kind of what goes into the consultation, is I definitely thoroughly assess what's happening for the patient. Mm-hmm. Are they coming here to actually like fulfill something that has nothing to do with what we're doing in the room and is actually trying to fulfill something else? Mm-hmm. They're usually not a candidate for treatments. Right. And I'll tell them that, you know, maybe we should really go this route or this route, because anything I will do, they will not be satisfied with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you do one thing and then you're on to the next because you're just looking for something else to fill that.
Correct.
But I can say that all the things that I did, yeah. Best thing. I mean, it did, like, of course. I was already confident to begin with.
Right.
Excuse me, but it just made me feel like more myself.
Exactly. No, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about earlier, you know, when you look and feel good about yourself, that's what you project out into the world. That's what you get back. Mm-hmm. That's the experience you have in life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when people come in here and they're just, it's almost like, why is it any different than getting your hair colored?
Yeah.
Why is it any different than when you go to the salon? You know, you go to the salon, your hair, you have grays, you know, your hair needs to get cut or whatever, you have a blowout. You walk out of there transformed. Mm-hmm. Why is it any different? Why is it any different than going to the gym and perfecting your physique? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing, but yeah. We're using gels and neuromodulators and peels and, you know, scalpels sometimes.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that analogy though. And I get that a lot, and I've used that before because I have an audience who's really into like bettering themselves and a lot through diet and fitness. And yes, it's to feel better. But we also do these things for aesthetics, and I totally agree with you. It's no different. It's like, why is dyeing your hair and working out and trying to, you know, tone up or whatever, how is it any different?
Fit a certain goal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like anything else, if you are a junkie at working out, mm-hmm. it's just as bad as being a Botox junkie. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like, so when you're taking it too far with the aesthetics, that's not our culture here. That's not what we do. We're not about that at all. I'll turn people away all the time. Mm-hmm. Any extremes, you know, is never a good thing. Yep. So.
All right. Well, let's take a couple questions. How can I take care of my skin during winter if I have to walk, face exposed to cold air, etc.?
So I guess I'm curious about, are we worried about like dryness? Because I know that sometimes cold or extreme weather conditions can make the skin more dry. So I would definitely use, I'm not a huge fan of moisturizers. Unless your skin is poreless and extremely dry, I don't really like to prescribe moisturizers. I do prefer hydrating serums. So things like the Definage or the Elastin, things that are hydrating but are also going to promote collagen and hyaluronic acid and things like that. So, you know, some of the lines that I really love the most are either the SkinCeutical, so vitamin C during the day, a really good sunscreen, and maybe, you know, if you're looking for something a little bit thicker, then you can use like a hyaluronic acid gel or the Elastin Restorative. You know, any type of serum is probably what you want to go with.
Okay. Do threads cause scar tissue, causing problems in the future with fillers or facelifts?
It's a very interesting question. That's a fabulous question, actually. Part of the reason why we do not do PDO threads here is because it does cause a type of collagenation in the skin. There's four different types of collagenation that can happen in the tissue. The one that we do not like is fibrosis. Fibrosis is a fancy word for saying scar formation. And yes, it can make it more challenging for the surgeon if you decide one day to have a facelift. And, you know, it's permanent. So we don't really like anything permanent apart from surgery.
That goes for Sculptra too, right?
Correct. So Sculptra, we usually reserve. Sculptra is not a filler. You know, it's made of dissolvable sutures and it embeds onto the bone. It stimulates your own collagenesis, this mm-hmm. kind of fibrosis that begins to happen. I usually reserve that for patients who are extremely cachectic, extremely thin, who cannot gain weight in their face. And they're very bony and very skinny and no amount of filler. I mean, I'd have to use like so much filler to kind of give them what they need. And they usually metabolize that even very quickly. So for them, I will use Sculptra.
Okay. What is the best treatment for sunspots?
So I really like, it depends on the type of sunspot, anywhere from intense pulse light photofacial. I also really love Clear and Brilliant, Fraxel. Those are kind of my go-to laser treatments for sunspots. The Pico laser, it's not something we have here, but it's also been shown to be really, really effective with all skin types in treating brown spots.
Is fat grafting better than injectable or fillers?
Good question. So fat, much like fillers, are unpredictable. In small amounts, dictated by the surgeon, can be used in different parts of the face, small amounts. Fat can migrate, just like filler can, and can hypertrophy or enlarge, just like filler can. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say that. It can enlarge, but they both can migrate. So it's not better necessarily, but it's kind of not encouraged to use a lot of fat in replacement of volume in the face. You want to make sure that you see your surgeon for that.
Okay. What about fillers for under eye hollowness? My fillers gave me ridges that look like huge bags.
It sounds like poor placement. Mm. That other thing that can happen also, aside from the placement, again, all fillers have the propensity to migrate, some more than others. The only type of filler that should go in the under eyes are Restylane Bellitero.
Not Moviderm.
Definitely not Moviderm. No, it's
you
too
tell
inflammatory.
I've been watching Ben's stories.
Oh my God, it's crazy.
For low income, is it worth getting a facial monthly or does it need to be more regular?
So it depends on your skin. Some people actually should never have a facial.
Really?
My skin does horrible with facials. I'm acne prone. Mm-hmm. Every time I get a facial, I don't care. I've been to some of the best facialists. It's just not been very good for my skin. So it really depends on you. You know, there are some facialists out there that are spectacular, that have done life-changing work for skin. Usually patients will go about once a month, once every 2 to 3 months, depending on what you're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. If you're just doing anti-aging and just like, you know, a little bit of extractions and pores and stuff like that, then maybe like, you know, every once, 1 to 3 months.
What helps calm or reduce inflammation on the face or in the cheeks?
So it depends on the type of inflammation. It sounds like you might be describing rosacea. Rosacea is an inflammatory process. It usually shows up on the cheeks. Inflammation can be reduced by steroids. I use a lot of steroids here, topical steroids and things like that. Inflammation is kind of a broad word. Acne is inflammatory, rosacea is inflammatory, eczema is inflammatory. So it all depends on what you're treating. Mm-hmm. We do have an LED light here.
Oh yeah.
We have a light and a bed. And that I love definitely that helps with inflammation. Yeah.
Okay. I think we answered pretty much all of these.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So to close out, what is one thing, actually I'm going to make this a two-parter.
Okay.
What is one thing everybody should be doing for their skin? Mm-hmm. And what is one thing we shouldn't be doing?
Everybody should be on a sunscreen. 30 or higher, anything less than a 30 isn't touching you.
Zinc?
Yeah, titanium and zinc is fine. Yeah, I really like the Ulta MD because it doesn't leave that white chalky film on your face. And everybody should be on a retinoid. Everybody should be on a retinoid. It is the gold standard for anti-aging. It's good for the skin, and it'll help you reduce fine lines and improve the texture of your skin. It's amazing. What you should not be doing, no more washcloths. No more washcloths. Everybody wants to use a washcloth, okay? Stay away from washcloths and the Clarisonics.
Okay, interesting.
Too abrasive.
Huh.
The washcloths. Uh-huh. And the Clarisonics, they are a cesspool of bacteria and fungus, and unless they're getting changed out once every 2 weeks apart and they're sitting out nicely to dry, which is never the case because they're usually in people's showers, I hate them.
That's a strong word.
Sorry.
You're passionate about
this. I dislike them because I've seen what they've done to people's skin. And
how often should we be cleaning makeup brushes to that point?
Probably like once every couple weeks. Okay. I know that's a little unrealistic, so I'll just say once a month.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I learned so much.
Thank you. I could talk forever.
I know. You're so smart and knowledgeable about all of this. Now let's go fill my face.
Okay, good.
Let's do it.
Oh my God.